822, Senator Paul Schimpf joining us this morning. Paul, as always, good to talk to you again.
Hey, good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
So here's the difficult question. If you knew then what you knew now, would you have still decided not to run for another term?
The answer to that is, I guess, no. If I had known that the judge thing was never going to pan out, I would have run for re-election. But the reason that I did not run for re-election is at the time that I would have had to file the petition, signatures, and make that decision, I was under consideration for one of the federal judge vacancies in Southern Illinois. And I believe that elected office is not a career, it's a temp job, and you have no business running for election if you're angling for a different job. The people of Southern Illinois deserve candidates who are 100% committed to doing the job that they're asking people to vote them in for. So that's why I did not run for re-election. Ultimately, the federal judge thing fell through, so I am a free agent come January of 2021, and we'll see what happens.
You know, when I put myself in your shoes, I very often find that the lack of a session this year, and I know there's something coming up here this month when it comes to, well, after the election day, of course. I would have thought that from your position as senator and seeing so little legislative activity in Springfield, that had to be frustrating in your final term.
Well, it's been extremely frustrating, not because I had any grandiose plans for myself, but it's just frustrating because what the lack of a session does is that really silences the voice of my constituents. Part of the reason we have that is so I can be up there asking questions on behalf of the people that I represent. And to me, you know, probably the most frustrating aspect of the COVID-19 pandemic is the fact that this has been done with all the measures have been undertaken with practically zero transparency and no legislative oversight whatsoever. And that is the thing that has been the most frustrating part of 2020 for me.
You know, and your frustration is shown, I think, with lack of voice and input, in particular on the issue of which metrics are being used for resurgence mitigation, including your district. That, you know, this is something you've had a lot to say about. We're using the wrong metrics to make big decisions.
Well, when Governor Pritzker announced his mitigation plan back on July 15th, he made that announcement and he talked about how important the positivity rate was going to be as a trigger for these mitigation measures. And at the very end of his press conference, if you can still watch it today, it's online, at the 48-minute mark, he talked about how he described how the positivity rate worked or how he thought it worked. And what was interesting is he said, you know, if you go someplace where the positivity rate is double, you're going to have twice the chance of being exposed. And that is not how the positivity rate works. So alarm bells went off for me right then because it was like, okay, the governor is announcing a mitigation plan that is based on a metric that he himself does not understand. So that was one of the reasons why I've been saying, look, the positivity rate is something that we need to keep track of. You know, we need to be monitoring it, but that should not be the basis for us shutting down businesses and destroying livelihoods.
What should be the metric used for that?
I think we need to focus on the COVID-19 hospital admission numbers, and I think really we need to be talking with the hospital networks in each region and say, look, at what point are you in danger of getting overrun? One of the frustrating things about this for me is that the governor has not updated his plan at all since July 15th. You know, his IDPH personnel will say, look, we're learning more and more every day. Every day we gain more knowledge. Well, why haven't we updated anything since July 15th? And I don't know that you could say, okay, there's going to be a magic number, a magic threshold of the hospitalization admittance numbers that would cause us to do more lockdowns, because, you know, hopefully over the past year, our hospital system has built up more capacity. They are, you know, hopefully have put plans into place where they can handle a surge. So the idea that we're saying, okay, we're going to establish, you know, a magic threshold amount that has been arbitrarily picked, and then we're going to take action based on that rather than assessing what is going on at the time, I just think that's the wrong way of doing business.
You know, I find it interesting in watching another group said they had benefited by a recent FOIA request, and a lot of emails about these decisions were out there, and they were published in over the weekend, excerpts from some of those emails. And the basic gist behind the story is that science and politics, that maybe politics is, in fact, playing a bigger role. But I struggle with that because I don't think any governor, and I don't anyway, wants to see businesses go out on his state. But at the same time, when you look at some of the decision-making and the items in the emails, you're like, well, they're clearly aware of some of the problems you just pointed out.
Well, and I've read that reporting as well, and the two takeaways that I had from it were, first of all, you know, the scientists that are supposedly advising the Pritzker administration, they didn't like using the positivity rate as a trigger either. So, you know, what I've been saying about, you know, ditching the positivity rate, you know, has really been validated by that reporting. What I was saying is spot on. The other thing that I took away from that reporting is that, as you mentioned, it's the political folks that are kind of organizing and filtering some of the science. And, you know, there's going to be a role for those folks to play. You know, we have in our society, we have non-experts making decisions all the time. That's what happens when you have a trial by jury. You have experts come in and testify, but then the non-experts on the jury assess the information and make a decision. So I'm not saying that the, you know, the political folks or the people that have executive experience that aren't necessarily the scientists shouldn't be involved, but what we have to have is transparency. And that's the thing that has been so abysmally lacking from the Pritzker administration almost from day one. He hasn't shared any of the background data, and really the refusal to just have oversight hearings where the representatives of the people can come in and ask the basic questions and say, you know, why are you obsessed with the positivity rate? Why are you, you know, why do you think that restaurants, you know, need to be shut down, you know, when other gatherings are okay? Those types of questions need to be asked, and they need to be answered with transparency, and that's how people will start listening to the governor again. If he, you know, as if he stops with the pseudoscience and starts being a little bit more transparent and, you know, having some legislative oversight.
Fair tax. I've asked this question and because nobody's ever said it, but Paul, if the fair tax goes yes and they win on that, would there be a required constitutional convention, or would it be just done on the House and Senate floor?
No, if the yes votes win on that, the Constitution is changed, and what will happen is the politicians in Springfield can charge different income levels different tax rates, and it's going to be much easier to raise taxes when you're just isolating a small group and raising taxes for that one small group rather than treating everybody the same and raising taxes or lowering taxes on everybody. So, you know, a yes vote gives Springfield politicians more power to raise your taxes. It's interesting that every state in the country that has a graduated tax system, which is what this amendment, you know, would be switching us to, every state that has that also taxes retirement income. So this is something where, you know, we've talked about this before, and I've been very vocal about this. You know, I don't think our politicians in Springfield are deserving of more trust and more taxing power. It'd be one thing if we had shown any type of ability to cut spending or act responsibly, but really, this has been a decades-long disaster of Illinois politicians doing nothing but raising taxes and raising spending.
You know, one good point I should bring up: for the fair tax to pass, it has to get 60% of the vote.
No, I would disagree with you a little bit there. It can pass in one of two ways. It either has to get 51% of everybody that voted in the election, or if you're just looking at just the people that voted on that ballot issue, which you would think that almost everybody will because it's the first thing, but if you look at just the votes on that question, it has to get 60%. But it's either one or the other.
Okay.
So if almost everybody is voting on it, it's only going to need to get a little bit north of 50% to pass.
Okay, good. I appreciate the guidance, too, on that, Senator. I really do. Because, like I said, I ask, and a lot of people go, I don't know.
It is confusing, and honestly, I do not know why we do it that way with our constitutional amendments. I think in the past, you know, my recollection, my recollection may be faulty, but in the past, I seem to remember, like with the transportation lockbox, that was at the end of the ballot. And, you know, in that case, it maybe makes more sense because not everybody is voting on something. But this amendment's going to be at the very front. And it passes if it gets 51% of the votes or more in the entire election, or if it gets 60% of the people that just vote on that specific question.
All right. Now, here's something, just an observation. I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. You look downstate, and you don't see challengers for Windhorse Severin. You don't see, a Democratic opponent for Dr. Paul Jacobs. You don't see it in the Senate race for Terry Bryant, who is seeking the seat that you currently hold. And I've had some interesting conversations, including with Dr. John Jackson last week about this issue, and I'm curious about your reading on this, because I kind of walked away from my last conversation feeling, well, they don't care anymore. Look, we've got a supermajority in the House. We've got a supermajority in the Senate. We control every state office. We're in the governor's mansion. You guys go do what you want, because we can do anything we want, whether we have your cooperation or not. So we're just not even going to enter the race. You're just marginalized to the nth degree. I wonder, is that a misinterpretation from my end?
The short answer is I don't know, and the reason I say I don't know is because, you know, there's one thing I've learned that I can't do, which is predict what's going through the mind of Speaker Michael Madigan, you know, and why the Democratic Party decided not to have challengers in those races. One possibility for that, and a possible explanation, which would be counter to your theory, might be that really the issue that Governor Pritzker and the Democrats care about the most, at least on the ballot down here, is this
fair tax,
the tax hike amendment. And when you have challengers in all these races, what that does is it makes the Republicans that are running stand up just full blown campaigns, and they're spending money and a lot of effort to get people to the polls. So one possible explanation for why there's not a lot of candidates is that, you know, they don't want Dave Severin, they don't want Paul Jacobs, they don't want Terry Bryant mobilizing Republican voters to go to the polls and vote no on this fair tax amendment. So that's a possibility. I just don't know. The thing that you and Dr. Jackson talked about, it's a grind to run for election. I don't think people realize how much work it is and how much hardship it is on your family. I certainly didn't realize it until I was a candidate. And, unless you think you've got a shot at winning, it's going to be very difficult to convince somebody to put their family through the hardship of a campaign. So I don't, honestly, I don't think that Governor Pritzker is writing off downstate Illinois, or that he doesn't care about us. I vehemently disagree with Governor Pritzker on policy stuff, but in terms of him, as a person, I do think that he is trying to be the governor for our entire state. He has put a lot of work and effort into the DuQuoin State Fairgrounds. So I'm not gonna attribute the lack of candidates to a disregard for our region. I think there's other possible explanations.
So, I mean, when I listen to that, I almost consider this a flanking maneuver when it comes to voter suppression, a different kind of voter suppression. Don't run anybody. They won't mobilize. We'll suppress votes by not having the fervor and enthusiasm that's customarily there through a two-person big money race. I mean, voter suppression?
That's a tactic that's been done, you know, all the time, in terms of there were a lot of people that said, hey, you know, it's not in the Republican Party's interest to have a full-blown attorney general campaign against Lisa Madigan back in 2014 because, you know, we don't want Lisa Madigan spending millions of dollars, you know, getting Democrats to the polls. I mean, this idea that, and I disagree with it. I think if I was the leader of the Illinois Republican Party, I'd be like, look, we're going to fight, you know, we're going to put candidates and try to give voters a choice in every single race. But there are political operatives that say, look, we need to sacrifice stuff in order to try to, you know, just not have the other side, you know, spend a lot of money on turnout.
All right. Senator Paul Shemp, Paul, appreciate it. We're going to have another opportunity to talk when you guys get back in session later in this month, so I'll be looking forward to talking to you then.
Well, your lips to God's ears. Let's hope that we do have a veto session because there is a lot that needs to be done.
It's been pushed off, and yeah, I think that there's time for some representation in Springfield and everything being run by, well, I've been calling it executive fiat. I believe that is not intellectually dishonest. I believe that to be the case.
I think that's accurate as well.